Hello and good evening. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Welcome to Consider This. This is the show where we want you to consider and then reconsider what you know of the news of the day. Now, it's been almost 2 weeks since the start of the Omicron wave in the country. And despite record high daily COVID-19 cases of more than 27,000, the average number of deaths has remained low. As a result, the Minister of Health has called for a decoupling of total infection numbers and severity. Now, what do we need to know about the latest variant and its impact on public health strategies? To help us answer this question, we have Dr. Chong Chi Kyong. He is Deputy Director General, Public Health, also co-chair of the COVID-19 National Rapid Response Task Force. Also joining us is Dr. Suresh Kumar, infectious disease consultant at Sungai Buloh Hospital. He's also part of the COVID-19 National Rapid Response Task Force. Welcome, doctors, to the show. If I may begin with that comment by Khairi Jamaluddin, Minister of Health, and direct this question to you, Dr. Chong. Just to quote him, he talked a little bit about needing to change our mindsets, that we have to read the number of daily cases together with all the other metrics to have a clearer picture of the situation. I'm just wondering, tell us how we should be thinking about decoupling cases and severity.
Thank you very much, and good afternoon, Melissa. From the press conference yesterday of our Honourable Health Minister, he has the sense that the public is too focused on the numbers. Numbers are good. When we started off during the first year of the pandemic in 2020, and even the second year, 2021 last year, we were always talking about numbers, how numbers go up and how numbers go down, because the numbers actually was associated with a proportion of severe cases and a proportion of deaths. And if you recall, at the very beginning in China, even the deaths or severe cases was as close or as high as 3-5% at that particular time. But things have changed since then. If you were to compare last year and this year, last year, if you recall, we had during the middle of the 2021, we had the huge outbreak at that particular time, particularly in the Klang Valley area, or what we call the Greater Klang Valley. And it was at that time driven by the Lambda, driven by the Delta variant. So cases spike up above the 10,000 and then spike up above 20,000. And there was an associated amount of severe cases. And at that point, it was actually stressing our healthcare system. But if you were to compare today, we have equivalent 20,000 and above, and even more, as you mentioned just now, we are having a record number of cases. But the severe cases are actually not that much. Every day, it's less than 1% severe cases or deaths, probably 10 to 20 deaths that we have been reporting recently. So you can see that if you compare this year and last year, I'll just give an example. Yesterday, 17th of February, we reported 26,701 positive cases, but there was only 39 deaths and 98 cases in ICU. For the same equivalent number of cases on the 26th of August last year, when we had 24,599 positive cases, we had 393 deaths and 990 cases in ICU. So straight away, you can see that the number of ill cases and deaths is totally different. It's only 10% of what we had last year compared to the similar amount of cases for both years. So this is the decoupling that the minister is trying to stress upon. While you look at the numbers and get anxious about it, we must not forget that the number of deaths is only 10%, the number of ill cases, 10% of what we had the previous year. And this is all because of certain practices that we have, our strong vaccination rates, as well as our practice of the SOPs. So I also cannot emphasize too much on that decoupling that we need to focus on. Focus on the ill cases is probably the way to go.
Yeah, so Dr. Suresh, we can follow up on that question of the numbers, and especially in a hospital situation. What Dr. Chong seems to be suggesting is that the main concern going into this pandemic was the collapse of the healthcare system, right? So protecting the healthcare system was primary. Are we collecting at this point in time the numbers in a right way? We know that in different contexts, for instance, there's a difference between somebody in hospital with COVID and somebody in hospital because of COVID. Is that kind of data being disaggregated in a Malaysian context?
Sharad, I think the first thing I just want to add what Dr. Chong mentioned just now as a clinician perspective. It's fascinating, isn't it? We have been doing this for the past 2 years, and every time the disease suddenly changes on us, almost like now you're dealing with a different virus. So when we first, in Chinese, around Chinese New Year, we started seeing more cases of Omicron coming in. And then we realized, hey, come on, these patients are doing very well. Why are you admitting these patients? Because these patients, during the Delta wave, we used to admit them, carefully monitor them, because they will deteriorate, they will require oxygen, eventually they end up in ICU. And suddenly we are seeing they don't need oxygen at all. Whatever we do, they don't need oxygen. They come here, come in, the next day they're walking up and down asking them, when can we go home, when can we go home? And so we ourselves had to learn, relearn or de-learn something that we heard last time, and telling back to our family medicine colleagues, don't admit these patients. These patients are doing very well. So initially patient gets admitted, the next day we'll send them home because they are saying, why are you admitting me? And so it has changed a lot. The disease has changed a lot. We just want to convey it to the public so that they understand that it is a totally different disease now. And I think it's a mixture of two reasons. Number one, we are a more immune population compared to when we faced the Delta wave, because a lot more vaccination, a lot more people have got previous infection. So we are by nature a more immune population. The second reason, of course, is some preliminary data saying this virus doesn't attack the lung as well as the Delta wave. And so because of these two reasons, we're getting mild disease. So it is mild disease, but a lot of people are getting it. Mm-hmm. And so what happens now, a guy who normally comes to us with heart failure because his heart is very weak, or comes to us because he has a myocardial infarction, a heart attack. So these guys continue to come to our hospitals every day. But this time around when they come, coincidentally, they're also infected with COVID. So we are seeing a new spectrum of disease where that's what Sharad referred to. Patients are coming in not because of COVID. They're coming with other medical and surgical conditions, but with COVID on top of it. But the COVID itself is never seriously ill because they have been vaccinated, right? Okay. Just that in Western countries, it's up to 40 to 50%. We are trying to collect the data. To Sharad's question, we are in the process of collecting the data to differentiate how much is with COVID, how much is due to COVID.
Okay, so based on what Dr. Suresh was saying, and what we know about this variant, mild but highly transmissible. Dr. Chong, does that mean that the health services is being pressured at a different point? So, for instance, what we were worried about with the Delta strain was, ventilation, category 4, category 5. But now, are we looking at more the ground level, primary healthcare that needs to be strengthened? Because when people get what may be some mild symptoms, they would think about going to their GP as opposed to going to a hospital.
Oh, that's actually a very good observation on your part, Melissa. Indeed, as explained earlier by Datuk Suresh, the cases now are milder and chances of admission now is a bit less. So we thank the virus for that. They are not causing as much harm as before. But people still do fall ill, and sometimes they don't really fall ill, but they have the virus in their body. They did a rapid test kit, the saliva test kit, and they found their positives. So some of them do come to us or to the GPs. By primary healthcare here, I like to elaborate that it can be either the health clinics of the Ministry of Health, or it can be the private GPs who are seeing the patient first. And they are always the first point of contact. So now that we know that cases are mild and the primary contact will be at the primary healthcare, it is very important that the people staffing the primary healthcare, especially the doctors, they are well educated as the of the current situation and how the viruses behave, especially the clinical manifestation and the clinical progression. You just had the brief summary by Dr. Suresh that patient falls ill for a short while, mild problems, and then it disappears. The next day, they seem to be relatively better. So the staff manning the primary healthcare must be educated as such and trained on the latest clinical care as well as the SOPs so that they can properly assess the patient, advise them for home isolation or refer to the proper place such as the PKRC or the hospitals if necessary. And thus, they can also act as gatekeepers in order to keep the hospitals from unnecessary referrals and so that they are not overly crowded. And currently, we even have what we call the virtual CAC, where we are monitoring these positive cases or patients. And what we need from them during our monitoring is that these patients, when they are at home, they should answer the health assessment tool that is inside MySejahtera. And when they answer the health assessment tool, then we know whether they are at risk and whether they are developing warning signs. And when they do develop warning signs, we will pick it up from our virtual system and we will advise them to go either to the physical CAC or to the hospital. So we are strengthening our primary healthcare and even adding the virtual CAC as part of the strengthened primary healthcare.
Dr. Suresh, I wonder if you can help us understand, the communication strategy that's necessary. The media has been handmade into government, sometimes, emphasizing numbers, perhaps with the intended psychological consequence that people comply with SOPs, right? Terrify them into complying with SOPs. We're now dealing with the unintended consequence of that, which is that there's a level of hysteria in society, driven partly by numbers. What do we do with this? How do we use the science to recalibrate the response, not just of government communications, but also media in their role, so that we have something of a calmer, more reasonable, a sense of proportion in dealing with the public policy choices that are coming up now?
So if you were to ask me what is my public message in this era of Omicron, is Omicron spreads from one person to another very easily. Everyone is at risk of getting the infection. Since most of them will have mild symptoms, we are not so worried about the infection, but we are only worried about people falling sick due to Omicron. It is that group that we are worried about. So mind you, even if you fall sick, the chance of someone dying due to Omicron is very, very low. But if you fall sick, you need to be hospitalized. If a lot of people get hospitalized, even though with mild disease, we still can run into problems. So the question is, who is likely to get sick with Omicron? It's those who have got other medical conditions, let's say diabetes, heart disease. Those people are more likely to fall sick with Omicron. There's a smaller group who have got a weak immune system. It's a very small group, but they are still at high risk. Within this group of people with medical conditions, those who are not being fully vaccinated, that is a high-risk group. Those who are more than 60 years old, this is a high-risk group. So we are actually now focusing our attention to a smaller group that now requires more attention. But now that I've identified this small group, what should I ask them to do? So what I will tell them, this small group will be, this is a period of high transmission. That means a lot of transmission going on. So until this period will subside, until this period subsides, you go out only if absolutely necessary. Work from home if allowed, get your food delivered or pick up. But if you have to go out, you need to wear a mask consistently. If somebody does not wear a mask, keep a distance from them. Avoid crowded places. Avoid places where ventilation is poor. Prefer outdoors over indoors. That's all. That's a succinct message that we need to keep on repeatedly tell people again and again and again.
Okay, Dr. Suresh, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. Let's come back and continue this conversation. Still a lot to cover about the public health approach to this new variant. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with more. Stay tuned to Consider This. Hi, thanks so much for staying with Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris. With me is Sharad Kutan. Let's continue our conversation with Deputy Director General Public Health, Datuk Dr. Chong Chee Kiong, also infectious disease consultant at Sungai Buloh Hospital, Datuk Dr. Suresh Kumar. I have a question for both of you doctors. Maybe I can direct it to Dr. Chong first, and then we can go to Dr. Suresh as a clinician. I guess my question has been that we focused so much over the past 2 years on vaccination rates and vaccine supply, but there's been much less discussion, particularly in the public arena, on therapeutics and the delivery system for therapeutics. Dr. Chong, how have therapeutic strategies evolved, particularly in the face of the Omicron wave?
Oh, okay. I think probably these questions of therapy would suit Dr. Suresh better. But before you pass to him, can I just emphasize a bit on the decoupling, as was also questioned by Mr. Sharat? Yes. Mm-hmm. So moving forward, I think the public now should gauge for themselves what's happening not only in Malaysia, but also what's happening in other parts of the world. So if you were to talk about Omicron in other parts of the world, you see that it hits those countries hard and fast, cause a huge spike. And if the population is well vaccinated, the wave will just burn itself out. The disease will burn itself out. It goes up quickly, and then it goes down rather fast as well. You can take United Kingdom as an example. So we foresee that this thing will also happen in Malaysia. And in those countries, the deaths are also rather low. You may have a lot of cases. UK, they are reporting, you know, tens of thousands a day. But in terms of deaths, it's rather low. And because of this, the public now must also take those as an example, that the cases may be high, but the severe cases will be low. And trusting the government on this is important. The sad part of sometimes in Malaysia is that we listen to a lot of news, some which are not so true. I won't go into that at this moment, but pass over the therapeutic strategies to my colleague, Dr. Suresh.
Right, Dr. Suresh.
Thanks. I think the most effective therapeutic strategy is vaccination. I don't think people realize how significant vaccination is. I will give you some numbers. If you go and take your booster dose today, after 1 week, just after 1 week, the chance of you being hospitalized due to Omicron decreases by 80 to 95%. That's how effective a booster dose vaccination is. And that by far is the single most effective therapeutic strategy, right? And I can't emphasize that more. There are some, we discuss outpatient care first. In the outpatient setting, because as you know, 90% of the patients are going to be out of the hospital. There are some antivirals, a lot of tongue twisting names, Nirmatrelvir and Molnupiravir, right? Tongue twisting for me also, right? These drugs are now approved for COVID currently. We are in talks with these manufacturers to get these drugs. These are very new drugs, not yet being manufactured in large numbers. So there are issues with the supply of these drugs. And so we are working with the manufacturers directly to get these drugs as soon as possible. But once when these drugs are available, they'll be used again for the high-risk patients. What I mean by high-risk patients, these are patients who, if they fall sick, if they get COVID, they're going to get severe disease. In this group of patients, we will provide these drugs. The inpatient care has evolved very well because we have been using it. We know how to manage inpatient care better now. We know what drugs to use. All the drugs for inpatient care, we have readily available and we can use it currently.
Dr. Suresh, let me follow up on that question because, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the issue around the infection is that in an individual, the progress of the disease, in the early stages is about the virus. But in stages 3, 4, and 5, it's really about your body's immune system or overreaction of your body's immune system. So the delivery of, say, an antiviral drug needs to come in at an early stage. And that seems to be linked to the question of testing and monitoring the early stages of disease, especially, as you say, for vulnerable populations. Is there a system, that allows us to think about the delivery of antivirals to the general population at an early stage? How does it work? I mean, could you help us understand the science and the medical science around this?
Yep. So we are well aware that we will be getting antivirals soon, right? And so the health system is getting prepared to deliver it, as you rightly pointed out, early. And so now what we have done is we've identified who is at high risk of getting severe disease. These are the people who are not vaccinated. These are the people who are more than 60 years old. These are the people who have got comorbid other medical conditions, right? So these group of people, we are now asking them to come to a CAC earlier. If you have diagnosed COVID, come to us. So what happens, that means, as you rightly pointed out, these antivirals work best less than 5 days of disease, right? And so our focus is to come bring them in earlier so that we are ready to give them antivirals. While if somebody is not in the high-risk group, we say, don't panic, stay at home, drink adequate water, isolate yourself. And if you have only serious symptoms, come to us. So we have sort of decoupled our advice to people. One group, we say, as soon as they're diagnosed, come in. Another group, we say, stay calm, stay at home. And the group that we are asking to come immediately will be the group that will be given antivirals in the near future.
Right. Dr. Chung, I have a question about testing and monitoring and also quarantine, because with this current surge of Omicron, I mean, the view has been that screening for asymptomatic disease is no longer relevant. There's also, as mentioned by Kari Jamaluddin in the press conference yesterday, talk about perhaps loosening restrictions or loosening requirements for quarantine for close contact for a specific category of healthcare workers. Can we talk a little bit about how this might impact the spread of the disease, the management, the public health management of the disease? What is the thinking about quarantine and testing?
Thank you very much, Melissa. I think we must understand certain terms to fully appreciate what the Ministry of Health is doing. Terms like mitigation, terms like moving into endemicity, and terms like living with the virus. Those are important terms. To put things into perspective, if you have a virus that is very severe and can cause fatality, there's no such thing as moving into endemicity anymore. We have to, catch that virus, save lives. If you have a virus that is very mild, doesn't cause death, like the common flu, the common cold. So you'll be asking yourself, hey, is there a need to worry about this kind of virus? I'll catch a cold and I'll, I'll survive. I'll deal with it. So we know over the last 2 years, the virus has sort of like evolved in terms of the variants that's attacking us. It has become less severe to the patient, the infected person, and the numbers game in terms of admission to ICUs and deaths is very, very low. So given that situation, then the first question is how much worry we should place on it. Now, the second thing is the infectivity. When you have a virus that can cause 20,000 detected cases a day, probably there are more that are not detected as well. So when you have huge numbers like this on a daily basis, a few things will happen. Number one, the virus is already spreading itself like wildfire through the community, so that almost everyone is getting it at one point in time. So is there a need to segregate people for 5 days or 7 days, when the chances are you'll be getting it the moment you get out from your house or home quarantine or from the hospital? And also, of course, the question is, if we want to keep everybody isolated and quarantined, do we have that capacity to do so? Here, probably I'd like to touch a bit on what Dato Suresh comment in asking people to come forward for early treatment. He was only pointing to those symptomatics that falls beyond a certain category. Our policy now is that the moment you are detected positive, we are going to send you a HSO and ask you to stay at home. And then you'll be quarantined based on empowerment. Empowerment, you stay home and you assess, do the daily assessment. And if you so happens to be having symptoms and a bit more severe symptoms, then we will ask you to come to the respective physical CAC or the hospitals to get treated as early as possible. So monitoring and putting in the HAT is important. So your question about whether the quarantine is necessary or not depends on a few factors. Number one, the severity of the disease and the immense, intense transmission that's going on now. It's spreading so fast and hitting us so hard that at one point in time, quarantine doesn't serve a purpose because you'll be getting it sooner or later, and maybe you might have even been, you may even have gotten it before. So our trust now will be on the public health system. But this, at the moment, we are not so comfortable with those who are positives. We are comfortable and we are quite sure that the close contacts are well protected enough and that their chance of transmission is relatively stable, and that a lot of people already would have been in contact with a positive patients.
Okay, thank you so much, doctors, for being on the show today. We appreciate your time and you sharing your insights. Thank you. That was our conversation with Dato' Dr. Chong Chee Kiong and Dato' Dr. Suresh Kumar, and that wraps up this episode of Consider This. I'm Melissa Idris.
And I'm Sharad Kutan, signing off the
email. Thank you.
Thank you so much for watching and have a lovely weekend.